Good morning and welcome to episode 19 of Taking the Charge podcast, coming to you from cold Regensburg, Germany. I'm under the weather, David Hein of Hein News, and with me as always.
Hi, this is Oz Davis from, I gotta say it again, from dreary and gray Budapest. It'll be so nice when we're able to do these podcasts and it's springtime, because then I can be more positive about the weather update here in Budapest. I can't believe this is really 19.
19, yep.
I can't figure out if that's like a lot or not enough. Because on one hand, it feels like we've been doing it forever. But on the other hand, 19. That's a big number. Well,
the big 2-0 is next week. if we make it to next week, I feel like total garbage right now. I'm going to be using my cough button quite a bit, so if it seems like I may miss a tone here or there, it's just because I'm using my cough tone. I'm going to brave it out today. Today's a Hungary special.
Yeah.
And it's not the fact that we haven't had anything to eat or anything like that.
You had to go there.
Well, sure, why not?
Yeah, this is the first joke or so-called witticism that English speakers in Hungary learn. This unfortunate joke is made probably thousands of times every hour on this planet.
Well, at least we're not in the minority, right? That and Turkey. They always combine them with Turkey, right?
Right, yeah. I went to Hungary, so I got hungry, so I went to Turkey. But there was too much Greece.
Oh, man. Sorry about that. Sorry, Oz.
Oh, man. Oh, brutal. Well, it's okay. You should apologize to any Hungarian interested folks who are listening to the podcast, actually. However, I should point out to our listeners that once again, David Hein is giving up the body for the podcast. Perhaps you should just blame this duck of a joke on the fact that you're under the weather. Day.
Yeah, I'll do that. No, I was seriously considering not doing it, and then I thought, well, it's we only have to talk for about an hour, and then I'll just lay in bed and put all this stuff together, and so the hot toddy and the Vicks vapor rub didn't really totally work yesterday. But
we're talking. Is this TMI? Is this TMI?
What do you mean TMI?
This is too much information based on the Vicks vapor rub. Do we really want to know your healing process? You know, taking the charge?
All right. This is the Hungary special. let's get the housekeeping out of the way. Do you catch me on HeinNews.com, obviously. Twitter, I'm at Hein News. We have a Facebook group. Join the Facebook group, Taking the Charge. Community going there. Oz, where are they?
Well, in Europe is also exchanging links and so-called witticisms, like I just mentioned. They're on the Taking the Charge Facebook page. The website for Ball in Europe is naturally ballineurope.com, as is the Facebook page. Please search for Ball in Europe, and you should find it. The Twitter handle is BIE_basketball, and the email is ballineurope@yahoo.com. We'd love to hear from you. Check us out.
So we would talk to Adam Hunga. Yes. How was that? Was that pronunciation sure. More or less okay?
Oh, as a non-native speaker, I am not going to correct you, Dave. I'm sure it's close enough.
The 2001 number 59 draft pick by the San Antonio Spurs, a Hungarian player, hence the Hungarian show, playing with Manresa in the Spanish Endesa League, fighting relegation right now. So we had a short little chat with him. We were able to get him. That was good. He gave us some good stuff, so that'll be coming up later. And then we looked at the movie Freedom's Fury, which talks about the 1956 Hungarian Olympic water polo team gold medal.
Yes, yes.
Gold medal.
In
And then
our
all the
effort,
political.
to address every sport ever
Exactly.
immortalized in film, this week it's water polo. Currently, one of the more popular sports in Hungary, in fact, unfortunately, well more popular than basketball. Well, unfortunately for the basketball centric of us. Yes, interesting film, but we'll talk more about that later.
We're not going to talk about all that too, all that much else otherwise.
Well, speak for yourself, Dave. I could say a few things. However, let's I will spare you the 3 hour conversation today. And let me ask you this. We'll do one EuroLeague question, because I think there's only one question this week, heading into about week five
Week five, yeah.
of the top 16 round. And that is this. How important is the Maccabi Tel Aviv Maccabi Basketball?
No,
Oh,
Olympiacos.
sorry, Maccabi Tel
Olympiacos.
Aviv Olympiacos game.
Olympiacos. This is as much as it can be. I mean, this could be the deciding game. I mean, the loser of that team, both of them are 1-3. And the loser of that will be 1-4. And we were saying yesterday, talking off air, that we could have in that group four teams, 4-1 or better. This is as much as it can be, almost for all the marbles. I mean, it's almost a do or die game because then you're 4-1, then you're three full games behind. The fourth place team, and the fourth place team goes through, and then you're also behind that team. Like if Olympiacos wins, loses, you'll be behind Maccabi in the standings. So you have to make good on you have to make up for the you have to beat them, and then also make up on the point differential to get ahead of them. So yeah, do or die, more or less. I mean, it's hard to say that after 5 weeks, but or after 4 weeks, that a week five game is do or die. But man, it sure looks like it, no?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's unfortunate, once again, let's do this once again. Every game counts. Maccabi Tel Aviv can claim to be the hard luck team in the EuroLeague. However, the excuses are not going to help very much. Throughout this tournament, throughout the EuroLeague season, they've lost five games. Three of those games are 2 points or fewer. Now, perhaps they're coming off their worst loss of the season to Khimki, playing over there in Moscow. They took a, what is it, a 21-point loss. Okay, so this is their poorest showing in the year. Shooting is way down in this game, etc., etc., etc. On the other hand, Olympiacos is a complete mystery. I suppose the point here is that the hot streak that began roughly in what, February of last year is over. Okay, the year-long run is over because it's all the same tools, it's all the same parts.
Well, I mean, I have a question though. Is that game against Montepaschi, is that definitely decided? Because it seems it's no, but I mean, no, but it seemed to what I had heard was that they were trying to determine what kind of error it was. For those who might not know, there was a clock, the clock stopped for about 3.5 seconds in the last 20 seconds. And then after Olympiacos, it was a tie game, and after Olympiacos missed the shot, Bobby Brown, our hero for everybody, comes races down and gives them in essence then the winning basket. But it was clear that the clock stopped for about 3.5 seconds, and you saw even and this and because Olympiacos were on offense, and I think there was 19 seconds left when Olympiacos had the offense, got the ball. And you saw the Siena, the coaching staff, the assistant coaches. If you go back and look at it, they're jumping up and heading over to the table, saying, you know, hey, the clock stopped. And then in the end, it basically served to their advantage. So, but what I had heard or read was that they're trying to figure out how the error occurred, and that there would be a possibility that they would replay the game. I don't know if they'd play the whole game or if they play the final 19 seconds. I mean, if I don't know. Have you seen anything else on that?
Wow. No, I have not seen any advancement yet. Being cynical as I am, I naturally assume that, you know, there will be a protest filed and then nothing will happen. The result will stand. this reminds me, there was an NBA game like this few years ago. A few years ago, where the teams had to replay the final 3 seconds of the game or whatever. And so they started it before the next game between the teams. The problem was is that this was months later and the rosters had changed. Now, you know, this kind of rankles me a little bit if you have to replay this game, the last to not replay this game, replay the last 19 seconds or whatever. Wow. In any case, if they do go that way, this would not be for several more weeks. Anyway, this the next game between these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, I
It's
don't know how
so.
they would do it because they would have to fit it into both team schedules, and as we know, these schedules of these teams are just outrageous. So to get them back to Greece, and you know that Greece, the Olympiacos, ain't going to say, okay, well, yeah, we can just play the last 19 seconds at in Italy. You know, they're going to want that game, however much of it, if so, played in Piraeus. So.
Well, there you go. There you go. But I there you go. I think the result is in the books. I think that this is going to be a Montevaschi win. The shoulders are going to be shrugged, and that's going to be the end of the story. You know, it doesn't matter in my opinion because I think Siena outplayed them. Period. I think they deserve to win the game anyway.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So they you know, Olympiacos cannot blame necessarily the clock guy for the loss. They lost. What really struck me about that particular game was the MVP performances. It is clear that I understand that probably the EuroLeague MVP just goes to the top performance index guy, who would be, let's see, right now that's Sean James of Maccabi. However, I don't think they'll advance to the Final Four. Probably not even the semifinals if they lose this week, right?
Well, isn't that and isn't the index rating leader Bobby Brown for the season?
No.
He's at 20.
Oh, okay. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong category. Yes, Bobby Brown is the leader. I was looking at per 40 minutes.
Okay.
Brown is the leader, and Kreapa is a couple of points behind.
Yeah,
Or so,
it's Bobby Brown, Paroussis, Baines, and Hirapa. So there's really only two left.
I see. I see Spanoulis, however, as you know, that archetypical most valuable player for all the people who like to argue this on the grounds of most valuable to the team for which he is playing.
I don't know. Bobby's way up there too, you know.
Yes, but watching that game in the third, fourth quarter when things were getting tight, Montepaschi demonstrated that they had options other than Brown. Okay. Yes, Bobby Brown is a playmaker in that classic European style, but he doesn't have to be. For Olympiacos, every possession goes through Spanoulis if it's not a fast break and he's out of position. Every play goes through Spanoulis. The late third quarter and early fourth quarter, especially, consisted of Spanoulis driving the lane again and again and again and again. And yeah, sometimes he would kick it out, but most of the time he was going for the one-on-one. Yeah, he was literally creating a shot, a lot of times from thin air. Now, I don't know if this is him taking over or the team's dependence upon him. However, all the fortunes of Olympiacos are, I think, credit to Spanoulis.
Spanoulis. Yeah, I agree. I agree.
In all aspects, you know, statistically and, you know, in those intangible floor leader aspects. So that's what really struck me about that game. However, this entire conversation could become irrelevant because, again, Olympiacos is looking at a big hole if they lost this week.
Yep, definitely. It's going to be, they have it as the game of week as well, for EuroLeague. It's in Israel, Thursday night. Without wanting to sound too German-centric, there will be history made on Thursday as the well, this is a big deal in the fact a German team will win a top 16 game for the first time.
Yes.
Alba Berlin are hosting Bamberg on Thursday in Berlin, they are both 0-10 so far. They're both in history in the top 16. They've both reached the top 16. This is the second time now, and obviously 4 games now in this campaign. So, it's a big deal in the fact that, okay, of course they're going to win. One of the teams is going to win. That's obviously, but that the success at the next level, at the EuroLeague level, is so important to the goals of the league, the German league. And that's why I just wanted to bring it up, is that it will be the first victory by a German team in the top 16. So, and they do have big goals to be the top team in the top league by 2020. And that will be in essence, the very first step, because it'll be the first victory in a top 16. So.
Oh yes, I mean, look. In all jokes and kidding aside, the truth is that for either club, this is going to be literally the highest level win ever by this club. The fact that it's the highest professional level finish by the German team is also important. However, okay, it's nice, and you say history will be made. However, this is a footnote unless one of these teams does defeat a European club, I think, before the end of the season. So I would fearlessly predict the Bros Basket Bamberg shocker in week 21
Week 21
at Anadolu Efes.
at Efes. I don't know, man. That's gonna be tough because those guards are so strong from the from them.
Oh, of course, but here we go again as a cynic slash closet Sasha Vujacic fan. I'm looking at.
I say they get a victory before that.
You think so?
Well,
You
first of all,
think so?
I think they're
Rudy
gonna.
Gaha.
Well, first of all, I think they're gonna win in Berlin.
Okay. Oh yeah. I've
But
got there.
as far as another team, I think Unica. I think
Okay.
that they showed that they could, they could beat them, and they just got to finish the job. So, and I mean Panathinaikos, if is Dimitrios going to be playing that game? That might be,
This is true. This is true. Panathinaikos without Diamantidis is not Panathinaikos, especially this season. He's really had a fantastic year. It was a shame to see him go down. Again, you talk about important to the team. This guy, aside from being one of the top defenders in the league, most of which, most of whose qualities don't appear on the stat sheet, again, general floor leader out there, on both ends of the floor. And without him, yeah, okay. But can Bamberg beat them? We will see. In any case, German basketball fans, European basketball fans, should, yeah, at least pay attention to that score, Bamberg Berlin this week.
So that's done with the EuroLeague. Did you want to talk on something else as well, or no?
No, I think those are the high points. So like I say, we won't put you through the grind too much, Dick.
Thanks. I missed the
There you
cough
go.
button on that one. Yeah, okay. So then I guess we'll go into our interview then.
Yes, sure. Let's do that. We are speaking with this week, we are speaking with Adam Holmgren, Let's see. Most notably is a tough question. He has played for Team Hungary last year at this point, last fall in the EuroBasket qualifiers. Clearly, the stud of this team, one of the top 10 or 11 individual performers in that tournament for the team. He is known in the States, not so well known in the States, but he is known in the States for having his rights owned by the San Antonio Spurs, who took him in the second round. Those crafty Spurs, who often take Europeans in the second round, or internationals in the second round, I should say, in the case of Thiago Splitter, and find that they blossom nicely in Europe. Autumn is trying to blossom nicely for Manresa in the Liga Endesa. However, they are unfortunately, what are they? 3-15, I believe, is the mark right now. So they are in the dreaded relegation zone. However, the future appears bright for Adam, personally. We speak for him for a few minutes. He really squeezed us into the schedule on an off day. So we speak with him briefly, but an engaging fellow, well worthy of a listen.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Adam Hunga.
Yeah.
Adam, welcome.
Hey, thank you. Welcome.
Thanks for coming on. Maybe why don't we just kind of just start with what it's like to how do you feel your season's going in Manresa there in Spain?
Yeah, it's a hard question. I mean, like, this season it's really hard now. I mean, this is my second season here in Spain. The first season was really good. That was amazing. Like, I just got here the first season and we did a pretty good job in the first season. But this season, the second season, and it's really hard. I mean, like, we have like only 3 wins and our team is really struggling. It's a really hard situation. Like, we knew that before. It's gonna be a hard situation. Like, even like financial problems and it's like a completely different team. I mean, like, four or three guys just left the team from last year. So it's really hard. But we just started the second round, so I think it's gonna be better. We're gonna play better for sure. And I hope, like, in the second round we can like win a couple games and like go up a little bit, because now we are in the last position in the league, and our goal is to stay in the league. So we have our goal, and we're looking forward.
One of the main reason people will know your name is because you were drafted by San Antonio. I believe I saw that you were in San Antonio over the summer. Maybe how that went down, and also what did they kind of tell you to work on this season?
Actually, on everything, it's like you always have to work on your shoot, on your defense and everything, your strength. But it was a great thing to I was there. That was my second time, because after when I got drafted, after like 2 days, I went there and just visit them, just like show up, and this time it was really good. With the national team, like the San Antonio coach, so he helped me a lot, and we were getting better. But still I have to work on it, and I hope they're gonna invite me again for the summer. And I just want to go there and like work hard. And it's a good opportunity for me because they drafted me, so they follow me the whole season and they follow my career. But still, I think I'm not ready yet for the NBA. But that's why I'm working every day hard, so one time I'll be there.
What? How did they find you? How did they see you? Were you? Did they see you at the Adidas Euro Camp in Treviso, or where was that?
I think they saw. I think they knew me before. I mean, like, I was like kind of like the prospect, like in my age. So I think they knew me before, like, for the national team. I played for the junior national team. They knew me before, and I was at the Adidas Euro Camp 2 times. So I think they saw me there. So probably that's why. And the last time when I went to the Euro Camp, I think I played really good, and probably that's why.
And so I believe you were in Spain when the draft actually took place. Is that right? Tell us about that. I mean, you must have been I mean, you knew there was only two or three more picks, and then second from last in the second round, your name comes up. Tell us about that.
That was a funny situation. It was like 6 in the morning in Hungary. So it was like, it was like a little late, and we were like waiting, and I thought I'm not gonna get drafted. It was like, well, just like it's just 2 picks left, and I was like really tired. I was really sleepy, and I just got the message from, because I had a teammate before in Hungary, and he lived in San Antonio. So I got a message for him like, "Hey, welcome to Texas." I was like, "For what?" I was like, "What is this?" And then I just like, just my other agent, like from the States, he sent me another message like, "Hey, what's up? You got drafted, so congratulations." So I was like really happy. It was amazing. And after like in the morning, I got a lot of messages and like calls, and everybody called me, congratulations. So it was really amazing. Like, I just, it's still like, it's still amazing.
It is pretty amazing. Most folks in San Antonio, I'm sure, are looking at this draft card and saying, "Who is this guy?"
Yeah,
One of
sure.
the one of one of the reasons why I wanted to have her on the show, Adam, is this. I mean, I'm living here in Hungary, and I can't help but notice that Hungary is not, the world's greatest basketball culture. How did you get into the game in the first place?
I think like, like San Antonio, I think everybody knows about San Antonio. They like the European prospects. And they have a lot of picks. I mean, like, they drafted Manu, they drafted Tony, they drafted Splitter, and all these guys, they were in Europe. I mean, like, my situation was a little bit different because, like, I played in Hungary and, like, unknown league, so it was a little bit different. But I think that's why, because they like European prospects. And like when I was there, they asked me like, "So did you expect like we're gonna draft you?" And I was like, "No." I mean, like, I was open, but I didn't expect it. And they told me like, they were like, "Sure, like if I'm gonna like available like in the last late picks, they're gonna draft me for sure." So it was really nice.
Speaking of, we talked about how you visited San Antonio in the summertime. Speaking of the summertime, I also caught your play in the EuroBasket qualifiers this year, and unfortunately, Hungary did not do so well and did not advance. But I wanted to ask you, will you continue playing for the national team, and what are your goals for the team and for yourself?
That's a good question. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, now, like, I'm also, like, going for step by step, but now I just want to focus on my, for my Risa. But about the summer, like, the last summer it was really hard. I mean, like, mentally and physically too, because that was my 4th year with the national team. Like, we didn't make it again. So it was really hard. It was like just small things, but still make it. So that's true, and that's the reality. And I don't know about the future, about the next summer. But I'm always be available for the national team. It depends, like, what I'm gonna do with my career, when I'm gonna go, what's gonna happen with the next summer, because I don't know what's gonna happen with here with some Manresa, or maybe I'm gonna change teams, or maybe I can go for the summer. Maybe I wanna try the summer league one time. So it's all about the future, and I don't know yet.
How would you classify, or where would you see the state of the game in Hungary?
It's it's really low. I mean, like, it's, I think some teams, like, the first two three teams, it's, they're really good. I mean, like, they better than the other teams. But the thing is, like, not so many good Hungarian players now in the league, because, like, we have a rules. They just like brought it like 2 years ago, like, so every team has to play, every team, how is it? I don't know, like, two Hungarian players has to be in a floor, like, so I think it was a good decision. But it's still like, it's a hard time for the Hungarian basketball. It's really good things now. Szolnok, they play in the Euro Challenge, and they play in the Adriatic League, so that's a good thing, and I'm really happy for them, because, like, I think this is the, this is the way where we have to like go. And you know, any other Hungarian teams who have money, they have to shoot. They should do the same thing. But you know, it's all about money too. And you know, so it's different.
I do a lot
Adam, do you feel, Adam, do you feel to some extent when you're playing in Spain or God willing someday in the NBA, do you feel to some extent that you're playing for Hungary, that you're playing for your country on an international stage?
Of course, I feel responsibility. I mean, like you know, only just me and the other player, like Peter Laurent, who played like you know, he plays in Italy now, and he played
He's a
last
world.
year in Spain. So you know, of course, I think we played our responsibility. All like the you know, that's the future. I think you know, like we don't have like guys who play outside of the country, so. It's a good example for the young guys, like you know, like you can guys like you can make it, and you know, it's a good thing. So of course.
And of course, probably some of the podcast listeners know the only Hungarian player to play in the NBA so far has been Kornél Dávid, played in the late 90s for a few teams, had a few cups of coffee in the NBA basically. Have you spoken with Kornél? Do you see him as something of a role model?
Yeah, of course, because like he was with us with the national team in the summer. He was our team manager, so he was with us through the summer. And you know, I knew him before because like he's from the same city. But I mean, like you know, he played for the same team, but I played in Hungary. So he's
Albacom?
He played for
Yeah, out
Albert
there in Székesfehérvár.
7 years. You know, they won like three championships, so he's a legend there. I mean, like he's a legend in Hungary. Yeah, anyway, so. Yeah, I spoke with him like, you know, a lot of times. And sometimes, you know, when he come here to Spain, you know, we you know, just show up, just have a coffee and like, just talk a little bit. And, you know, I think he can help me a lot too. Like, you know, he told me some things about NBA. Like, you know, like he told me like the first year was amazing for him because like, you know, everything was like new. It was different. You know, it's like, you know, it's like shiny. Everything was like, you know, it's different. And you know, but he told me that you know, in the second year he didn't play too much. So he said like, okay, like you know, the first year was really good, but the second year I just want to play. You know, it's you know, second year is like all these shiny things just like go away, and you just want to play, and you just want to you know be in a court because you're athletes, you're a professional basketball player, so that's what you want to do. You just want to play. So yeah, he told me some experience, and you know, that's good.
The Spurs fans can read about you, and you know, catch videos, video highlights of you. But who are you? Describe yourself to the San Antonio fans about you and your personality. How would you describe yourself to them, as someone, as sort of this mystic figure over in Europe that nobody has really seen?
That's a good question. I think I'm a good guy. I'm always put the team first. I mean, like, you know, this is my point. I mean, like, I just want to help the team. If you know, if I can help the team with my defense or with rebounds or steals or blocks, you know, that's what I'm gonna do. I mean, like, you know, first, like, you know, I've always been a scorer. You know, like I just always been a scorer and like, you know, just focus on offense. But now when I got here in Spain, you know, like. They told me like you know it's not that like you have to play some defense too. So the first season it was really hard for me because like you know I was like just okay I just want to play offense I just want to score. But now I think I just like be like more experienced and I just wanna I focus on defense too. And you know steals. So I try to help my team and that's who I am. I just wanna you know be in a better team and you know be. Do my best for my team.
One thing that we like to do as well is kind of coming back to Hungary. I write about some youth basketball. I was looking around and came up with a couple of names. Just was wondering if you could maybe offer me some opinions of some of the young kids in Hungary who maybe look up to you and then say, well, maybe you know that could help us you know get to the next level. Zoltán Pearl, maybe if you know him, teammate also,
He
95.
plays. Where does he play? He plays in Budapest.
Can't remember right now. I know he's 95 generation.
95. I mean, like, 95 is, they're so young.
Yeah. Okay,
I'm
good.
only born in 89, so, but I'm young too, but they're so young. Another thing is, like, I just left Hungary like 2 years ago, and, like, with the young generation, I'm like, not like in the picture, right? I mean, I know my age, like, until like 90, 91. I think they have like a couple of good players, but the thing is, like, I think they have to like move forward. Like, like, if they have an offer or they have an option or they have like something, they have to move forward from some other teams outside of Hungary, because that's how they have to do. I think that's the future.
For the fans out there, you do have a pretty spectacular game. Which do you like better and why? The a big dunk or a nice block?
Oh, that's, I don't know. Both. Both. Maybe I can say the blocks. I think it's like more like, I don't know, maybe the blocks. Yeah, I think the blocks. I like to dunk too, but, like, maybe the blocks is better for me. I mean, like, the feeling when you feel like, I blocked him.
Yeah. I saw somewhere in some story about you that you enjoy video games. Is that right?
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Give us some tips. Do you have the Y2K? No, what is it? Oz, you're the you're
2K13.
2K13. 2K13. Do you have that? And what are your thoughts?
I just have a 2K12 because I don't know. I think it's the same. I mean, like, I'm not buying, like, like every year the same game. So I just like always skip 1 year and just buy the next one. So I got a 2K12. I played it a lot, if I have a time, if I have like, like free time, but it's, it's, I like these kind of games. I like better the sports games than the, shooting games or whatever, the killing games. So, but I like it.
What else do you play Madden? All
Yeah,
right, good man.
sometimes, but I like better the basketball game because I understand it, like, or soccer,
And of course, you play the you're the Spurs when you play, right?
Yeah, of course. I have a
All
mustache.
right.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Okay, Adam, I know you've probably got to go now.
Yeah, thank you.
I thank you very much for coming on the show. I think we even have a special goodbye for you as well.
Yeah, thank
Yeah,
you
kissing
guys.
your Kseipans. Kissing your Kseipans.
Oh, that's nice. Kiss them safe, man. Kiss
Well, I'm trying. I'm trying. 15 years and I'm trying,
them. Thank you
It's
guys. Thank you guys. It's a
okay.
pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. See you guys.
Yeah, so Adam was good to squeeze that in. It was definitely cool that we were able to talk to him. And he got a team meeting or something like that. So yeah, it was I didn't see him very much. I haven't seen him very much. I was looking at some video of him and definitely a slasher. Did you at the Eurobasket qualifiers then this summer? I know you didn't get to the games at all, the Hungary games at home, but did you the were they shown on TV even?
Oh yes. Oh yes. Yeah. National team in any sport will get on the TV, basically. Even basketball, shall we say, which is, pretty low behind the most popular sports to watch in Hungary, which would be soccer, and soccer. So basketball doesn't get much play. However, yeah, every kind of national team is playing home or away, they'll show it live. So yeah, I watched them the whole way through. I think I missed one game. I am a big fan, of course. I'm a big fan. We talked before about history being made in not so much that basketball power Germany. Well, here's history being made in the really not a basketball power Hungary. Adam is, of course, the first Hungarian ever drafted into the NBA. Adam is looking to become, I mean, as you could hear in the interview, he's very enthusiastic, positive, very goal-oriented, that goal being, of course, the NBA, where he would become the second ever Hungarian national to play in the NBA. And you would suspect he would enjoy a little bit more success than his predecessor, Kornél Dávid, who essentially formed the role of being the serviceable big man. Despite his skills, I mean, make no bones about it, he's playing the NBA. Cornell Downey is a good player. However, he was never really, given a chance to shine, in his opinion, and certainly in mine as well. And so here's Adam Hanga, potentially, again, making history, making NBA history, Hungarian basketball history, international history, whatnot. I would imagine that next season would be another turn in the Liga Endesa. And you mentioned that there's some interest in him.
Yeah, I think I saw something that Bilbao was kind of interested in and maybe picking him up. How for people not in Hungary, I mean, I know what it's like in Germany when a guy gets drafted. How was it seen media wise,
The
and
actual
interest?
drafting?
Yeah, that the fact that he was then drafted back
Oh, it's
in
huge.
June in 11.
It was huge. It was huge. To be sure, this guy got more press here than in the States, where, as I said in the interview, the reaction was kind of, huh? Who's this guy? Another obscure European player drafted by our team. Oh, okay. We'll wait a couple, 3 years and see if anything happens. But yeah, it was huge. It was huge. I mean, for a good week and a half solid after that, constantly doing interviews, lots of FaceTime, dominated the sports media here. Just the speculation and da 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 da. However, the Hungarian folks kind of tending to be, at least the journalists, tending to be a bit pessimistic by nature, and basketball being of such low esteem, and the fact that he's not going to play in the NBA for 2 3 years after this draft choice, so the story kind of faded into the background really quickly. Occasionally, they show his ACB games on the TV here, but again, it's tough to sell a team that's not winning, and it's really tough to sell a Spanish team that's not named Barcelona or Real Madrid. That's the coverage nowadays is certainly not ideal. And he mentioned the other one he mentioned was Laurent, Peter Laurent, who's playing for Roma, for Virtus Roma. Now, I think that in a country with, let's say, a stronger basketball fandom, that these games would be on the TV. For sure, Roma games. This is, I'm trying to think of a smaller country with a good basketball culture that could be used as an example. But I think that if this guy were in another country, he'd be getting a lot more media than he does here. But again, like I say, basketball is held in such low esteem that nobody's paying attention to the lower levels. And by lower levels, I mean anything that's not the NBA. So the media attention is limited, but he gets his day in the sun once in a while. Once he goes to the Spurs, yeah, I assume that they become Hungary's home team. And I assume that, yeah, we'll have all the games on the regular channels. You won't even have to go satellite or cable or
On
anything.
the regular channels, really.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, I mean, there's sports channels now that are, but there's at least one sports channel that's part of the regular offering. Plug your TV in and you get like whatever RTL Club Sport or Sport Club or whatever. It's
Okay.
free.
And that'll be, and you would think that those games would be shown on that.
Oh sure. Oh sure. Yeah. I mean, again, like I say, all of a sudden he becomes they become the home team. It's a situation on a much smaller scale where, like the Rockets became the home team of China,
China.
more or less, Beijing certainly, and Yao Ming's own region certainly. And so it would be a situation like that for sure, no question, no question. It didn't happen so much with Cornell Davi because one, the entire world was under the glow of Jordan in those days. So, all anybody really cared. I mean, you experienced this. How many people do you know in Germany whose favorite team is the Bulls? Because they were coming of age at the same time the Bulls were dominating.
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard in Germany because everybody's favorite team since,
Well, yeah, of course, it's the
is the
Mavericks.
Mavericks, but
Right. Not so in these more neutral countries that don't have NBA representatives, so that tends to happen. I've met so many people.
it was funny. It was funny when I came here originally. It was, when I told people I was from Chicago, originally, at the beginning, they all said Jordan, Jordan, Jordan. No, Capone, Capone, sorry, Al Capone. And then over the, like say mid-90s and stuff, then everybody was like, ah, Jordan. Originally they associated Chicago with Al Capone, the gangster, and then eventually Chicago was associated internationally, in Germany at least, with Jordan. It was really funny. It was the development like that.
Oh yeah, anytime I would tell somebody from Hungary that I was born and raised in roughly near Boston, Celtics, Larry Bird, I mean, every time in the mid-90s this was. But again, this is the effect of NBA marketing. However, Cornell David is a bit of the dark side of NBA marketing because here's a guy that's bouncing around from team to team. And he's living in the shadow of these other great players. I remember, in the late 90s, he was bouncing along and he was offered a 20-day contract or 30-day contract with Cleveland. And because all of a sudden, a couple of the big guys went down, they needed a body in the middle. Okay. So the first game he plays with Cleveland, he draws Shaquille O'Neal. And this was in the dominant late 90s Laker run. And he just got destroyed. And of course, this was in the Hungarian media, unfortunately. I mean, it was, repeated posterizations, et cetera, et cetera. But again, this is kind of the dark side of NBA marketing. Hanga, on the other hand, I think it's all upside. It's all upside. He's working hard, particularly in Spain. He's attempting to improve on his defense. However, that team's so porous on that side of the floor, it's not even funny. He's second on his team in performance index rating. The discouraging thing is his 3-point shooting this year is down to 31%. Not so good. You'd like to see that higher, especially the way he was tossing them in the Eurobasket qualifiers. My God. So you definitely want to see an improvement on that mark. But I think that this is a guy who's focused. I think that he has natural skills for sure. And I love the basketball IQ on this guy. Really impressed with that. Really impressed with the court vision and the understanding of zones and things like this. Really like that. So good luck to you, Adam, for sure, and look out for this guy.
Okay, Adam Hanga. Let's take a music break really quick.
Welcome back to the Taking the Charge podcast. Sons of the Teens, once again bringing you the freshest sounds from our decade. That track was Piranha by the Budapest-based collective Robot Rock. We'll be closing out our show with the excellently titled Cypress Hill versus Roscoe Let's Go Robot Rock Remix. Robot Rock invites you to visit their awesome Facebook page at Robot Rock, M-U-S-I-K, on Facebook. Check it out. Now, back to the podcast at more sports talk.
Thank you, Wolfman Oz.
You should have been doing that today.
I should have done that today.
You could have just done it straight, and yeah, it would have been perfect.
Yeah. I feel bad. I feel bad that I'm not more cheery. But
Well, we're gonna discuss sort of a non-cheery subject.
Yeah.
In the movie review this week, so it's okay. And again, you know, as most European folks know, let's say that Hungarian folks are not the most cheery people in the world, especially in the gray of winter time. So perfectly fine.
Okay. The film this week is Freedom's Fury, a detailed look at the 1956 Olympics, the Hungarian gold medal winning water polo team, and everything surrounding the political situation with the Soviet Union. Moving into Budapest and Hungary. So it's a documentary film, and here's your synopsis.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on this. So Freedom's Fury, as Dave said, is a documentary film made in 2006 in observance of both the 1956 Summer Olympic Games played in Sydney, Australia, I believe. Yeah, Sydney, Australia. Mm-hmm. And also the observance of what is referred to as the Hungarian Revolution of 1956. Now, technically speaking, this isn't really ultimately a revolution for, you know, reasons that we could discuss later. The documentary film was put together by the brother-sister team of Colin K. Gray and Megan Rainey. And I encourage you, I'm going to stay on top of the review here. I encourage you to check out the IMDb pages of these guys. Quite the interesting CVs they've amassed between them or individually. They have done film or TV series on the Wisconsin rock band Static X. They've done a look at lottery winners and what happens to them in America, and an upcoming documentary entitled Being Canadian. Sounds fascinating and probably promises a lot of hockey highlights. So, yes, check these guys out. In this film seems to be a bit more of a sober look. Yeah, it's something of a serious subject. Being the sports podcast, we're going to say that the focus of the documentary is the Team Hungary water polo team of 1956 playing at the Olympics that year. And more precisely, the so-called blood in the water match between the mighty Hungarian team and the not so mighty water polo players, but mighty force in the world, the Soviet Union. The documentary itself concentrates on both stories. Of course, concentrates on the revolt of 1956 and what was happening there, and the very interesting way that it unfolded. Back in the States for my graduate work, I did a lot of research reading the literature and the firsthand accounts of this event. At the time in 1956, interesting story there. Meanwhile, the water polo team is essentially a sort of dream team. I mean, basically, whether you're doing a documentary or a fiction film, it seems that your subject is one of two types. It's either a ragtag bunch of low budget, semi athletes, or you get the dream team. Okay, this is a dream team. All right, Hungary is recognized as one of the dominant powers in water polo at this time, and of course, as in so many of these movies, like Fire in Babylon, these movies that we have talked about on the podcast. Again, this is in the pitch on the court, it becomes, or in the pool in this case, it becomes a much bigger question than just throwing a ball around for more points. The unfortunately, not a lot of clips of the actual matches are available. They do cut some in once in a while. It's what you would expect out of 50-year footage. So you don't really get a sense of the matches themselves. However, just running down the highlights of what these guys do. And again, I don't really consider this a spoiler because it is a matter of history at this point. For example, just not knowing anything about the game. If you consider that in the five games they played in this Olympics, they allowed three goals. Okay, now it doesn't matter what sport you're playing. Okay, if you allow three goals in five games, you're probably going to win most of those. Again, it doesn't pick your game. That's a pretty good number, and showing again how dominant these guys are. On the other side, you get a lot of the political stuff, including a number of subjects, some not so famous. However, I gotta say, wow. How did the filmmakers get Sergei Khrushchev, son of the former,
How about
Soviet
it? How about
Union,
it?
to be in this film? What a score. And, I mean, to be honest, it's pretty much what you'd expect. I mean, of course, the man is an apologist for his daddy, but it's an interesting window onto history. And you look at this guy, and he's charismatic and he's well spoken in the second language, and you can really imagine, how Nikita rode the cult of personality thing. I mean, Sergei is a shadow of his father, but still, I mean, this guy is, you listen to him. He is compelling. He does tell a good story, and he looks like an interesting guy. On the other hand, on the other side, and I think I was thinking watching this movie, I think that in any sport documentary, especially a team movie, you need that compelling superstar, that engaging superstar. And happily enough, it's in this movie. Ervin Zadvor is just an amazing, funny, friendly, enthusiastic guy.
That was the youngster, right? The kid.
Right. I imagine him as sort of the combination between Ricky Rubio, making the highest level of the game at this very young age, and Gary Payton, because as the story goes on, we learn that he's one of the great trash talkers on the team. And ultimately, this trash talking precipitates the blood in the water match. The reason why it's called that. There's also this great story where, after the streets are in ruins from these attacks, and the various troop movements through Budapest, that he walks a total of 30 miles in a day, to go visit his parents and say, "Hey, I might go to Australia and not come back." A movie well worth seeing. I should say that it takes a little while to get going. There is no way, I think, to present nicely what the Soviet Union was doing past World War II, and I don't think there's any way to portray that except for grim and very serious. However, after the first 15-20 minutes and the table gets set, both the story of the 56 uprising and the water polo team become incredibly compelling, and especially on the sports side, a lot of twists and turns that keep the story interesting. And I won't say too many of them, but the story does go in unexpected ways, despite the general dominance of the Hungarian team. Decent movie, and the best news of all is you can go watch it on YouTube right now. Just do a search for Freedom's Fury, and it's in 8 parts of roughly 10 or 11 minutes each, so about 90 minutes.
Yeah, it was it goes quick too. It goes quick too, and I mean, if you don't know much about the that period as well, is also it's also very, very informative in that regard, just from a historical standpoint. A lot of that, you know, I didn't know. So that it's always good to have a little bit of history lesson as well. So that was enjoyable.
It is an interesting period in history. I mean, it's incredibly brief. I mean, considering that this is the basically defining moment in Hungarian history in the 20th century, this is something that only went on for 2, 2.5 weeks. And once you start researching it, and after this movie, I'm sure like folks would look up the Wikipedia and et cetera on it. You learn these crazy other bits that are not in the movie. For example, when the Soviet troops were preparing to come back to Hungary after the initial like revolt was played at as being a success, after the tanks were rolled back into the country, when they first started out, the lower troops, the privates, if you will, the non-commissioned officers, were told that they were going to Egypt. They were told that, okay, so we just left Hungary. Okay, so now what? So now we're going to Egypt to take on, Britain and France about the Suez Canal. Literally, just crazy stuff like that comes out when you start researching this story. So it is quite the interesting story. Of course, again, it's a matter of record, so we all know that, the mighty Soviet Union punished Hungary, and for this call for freedom, my God, for this call to choose your own leader, who actually, was a socialist. At the center of this is, of course, the new premier of the country, Imre Nagy. And I mean, the secret is, the not so secret is, that he was a communist socialist, whatever you want to call it. He just wanted to improve the state of Hungary. That's it.
Would you call him a moderate, though?
Well, I mean, what it's hard to define that. I mean, the truth, okay. Basically, as far as I see it, as far as I can tell, here's what happened after World War II. Is that a lot of people in Hungary, and I've been told this by Hungarians, but a lot of people in Hungary, Romania, Poland, Czechoslovakia, right, quote unquote, Yugoslavia, whatever, they were idealistic about this system. There's another very good movie, which we actually made you on the podcast one of these days, called Sunshine, which has three generations of Hungarian people through of this family. Through the 20th century, it stars Ralph Fiennes, and there's a bit about this Olympics, in fact, in which he's a fencer. He's a fencer for the national team, and this was another sport that Hungary was very good at, especially at the time. But what happened was is that these people, the first generation, were very idealistic about communist ideals. Yes, we want to reward the workers. Yes, we're going to put an emphasis on education. And yes, thank God you got rid of the Nazis. That was the thing. But after about one generation, it became clear across, what we now call Central Eastern Europe, that, the corruption was rife and everybody was taking orders from Moscow. This was the problem, is that the system like ate itself very quickly. When you take away most everything that everybody has, the people in power are going to grab what they want. They're going to grab what they can get, I should say, and that's in a nutshell, in your basic sociology 101 class, that's what happened. That's what happened. And so, yes, Nod believed in the ideal. He might have, in another world, he might have been a good communist, But he just wanted to make sure, and they say this briefly in the movie, that the Soviet Union had left Austria because they figured the country could do better economically without them, and that at the time Khrushchev came in, that most of the Central Eastern European countries were being crushed economically. People were starving, this things cost outrageous amounts of money, nobody had anything, there was no hope, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Nagy just wanted more for his country. That's it. Tito was getting tons of money from the Soviet Union for being a vacation spot. Why couldn't Hungary get more money for all this massive agriculture that they were, feeding the communist countries, goes the argument. So there you go. They hung him for it in the end. They hung him for it, for daring to question, Moscow. I don't think the revolution, he became a symbol of the revolution, okay? But the research shows that, I mean, the revolution was acting completely independently of mainstream political machinations. I mean, it's not like Nagy was encouraging the students or the workers to strike. That wasn't happening. But the students, especially the great idealists at that time, saw hope in that. They could have their cake and eat it too. They could have this nice communistic worker student-centric system, and still everybody would have a little bit of money and could have some stuff, and could have a say in the media. So
Onto the sport itself, from 28 to 80, in a span of 12 Olympics, the Hungarians had at least bronze in each of those, and six golds and two back to backs. And then 2000, 2004, 2008 won gold. Maybe do you know anything that had happened to the sports? In Hungary, then, in between the 80 and 2000, where they didn't take a medal, and then maybe also 2012, they lost in the quarterfinals to Italy. How much did that irk, if you will, the
In this last Olympics?
yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll definitely touch on that. Okay, look, if you ask a Hungarian nowadays, of a reasonable age, I mean, you can't ask somebody who didn't come of age when the Soviet Union didn't exist. Okay, but if you ask anybody with any sort of historical perspective, they'll say, look, this 56 thing, because again, this is something they only touch on in the movie, but the real damage of the 56 thing was that 200 to 250,000 Hungarians from a country of 9 or 10 million leave. And I mean, these are not just random people. In most cases, these are, the sorts that can afford to get out when the getting is good. Probably the most famous example was, of course, Puskás, Ferenc Puskás, who's basically the best soccer player, of all time until Pele. He's one of these guys, that gets out. And of course, the science and education and the medical establishments all feel this push. Okay, this literally affects all areas of Hungarian culture until really the 90s, honestly speaking. What happens most prominently, of course, there's soccer, but water polo, this happens too. Well, what happens is every team is sponsored by, either one of the manufacturing collectives or whatever, and of course the various levels of government. So there is to this day a club, a sports club here in Budapest called Honvéd, which is defense. Guess who they were sponsored by? And so this happened. Now, there was blatant fixing of matches. It would be a situation where, you want your bill passed or you want money for this budget or whatever. Okay, your team loses to mine in this week. I mean, literally, this stuff was going on. And Hungary is the sort of country where scandals are very out in the open. And it's almost a challenge to, for them to say, okay, call me on it. Tell me I'm doing something wrong. And so, literally, all through the 70s, especially, matches were fixed with regularity, league was fixed, everything was preordained in both soccer and water polo, especially, probably in the other sports I don't know so much about. them. I do know that basketball is nearly non-existent through this time until the NBA marketing kicked in, basically. Hungarian basketball is at very best a footnote for these decades. In the 90s, you saw a resurgence, but I would say in certain sports. I remember coming here in the mid 90s, and in 96, one of the big stories at that Summer Olympics in Atlanta, I believe it's 96, yes, Atlanta, was Krisztina Egerszegi, the Hungarian swimmer. And, you know, this boggled my mind for years, is that how can Hungarians be so good at water sport, and sports in the pool, and yet it's a landlocked country? And they said the same thing that they said in the movies. I'm like, well,
yeah, exactly.
We're in there. Excellent.
It's a landlocked.
It's true. It's true. They are. They are. I mean, a lot of people will take the pool or the club, you know, just everyday people as a form of exercise because they're all over. And so in the 90s, again, when sort of money was freed up and people were coming back to Hungary and investing, you know, the expatriated from 56 were coming back in the early 90s. As soon as everything changed in 91, 92, they were back. And there was a little bit more money, and so the team developed again. Now, until this season, until this past Olympiad, I believe that they had back-to-back-to-back, they had the three-peat gold medal. And then,
yep, 2000, 2004, and 2008.
Right. Let me tell you something. My God, it was – people here were crushed. I mean, people here were crushed. I mean, you know how it is in any country these days, is you get the national television station, and they tailor-make – the broadcast to the home team, right? So you see all the events that here in Hungary, you see all the events that the Hungarians are participating in. Of course, in America, this becomes ridiculous because then you only get to see the gold medals, but that's another axe to grind in any case. And of course, you know, the marquee thing to do every day was to watch the water polo because this was the thing that the Hungarians were going to win. But then they took a couple of losses early, including to Serbia, which, as the film mentions, you know, the Yugoslavian countries have a tradition in this sport as well. They lost to Serbia early, which was a killer because, you know, everybody knew that this was going to be the dangerous match. I believe they beat the U.S., but it was closer than it should have been. And yeah, when they went out that low, it was a heartbreaker. It was a heartbreaker. Of course, immediately, you know, you can guess what the sports media reaction was. It's, oh, clean house. You know, get rid of the coach. You know, da, 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 da. I don't know enough about the game to say that, except that clearly this is a reactionary stance. However, one of the marks against them was that, you know, this is a pretty old team. I mean, you talk about the three-peat. Well, a lot of these guys are coming into this Olympiad with two medals. You know, this is an old team. So to some extent, yeah, they could clean house, but the water polo league and the water polo federation is really strong in Hungary. So they'll be back. They'll be back. I mean, this is a national pride thing. We'll be back for the next Olympics.
Yeah, they ended up losing to Serbia and Montenegro, and then losing to Italy in the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
So national tragedy.
Wow. Hungary. I mean, national sports tragedy. Let's not.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, again, you know, national tragedy is Soviet tanks coming into Budapest and shooting things up. That's national tragedy.
Exactly.
Sports tragedy. I mean, it was, you know, again, with so many of these documentary films, you get that juxtaposition, you get that contrast of national tragedy versus sports victory. You know, something to perk up the home, you know, the homeland through culture, through sport. And so that's the case in this movie.
The movie is Freedom Fury. There's a link on the site that you can watch it, or just put in Freedom's Fury. Freedom. Wait, no. I'm
kind Freedom's of, Fury with the possessive.
Freedom's Fury. Yes, exactly. Freedom's Fury. Just put that into YouTube, and then you can get that. So Yeah, I guess that's all we got today. I guess what are you working on this week? Do you have
That's a
anything?
wrap. A lot of basketball here again. Thank you. To be honest, taking care of personal issues a lot. I have been called out on the Ball in Europe site for not paying enough attention to my beloved Euro Wolves, my beloved and nearly crippled Euro Wolves.
Did
And
they
so, and so.
add Jelle Bell, or was that Memphis?
No, yes, they did. They
Yeah,
did.
so you have another
Yeah,
Euro.
well, this was the reason for the calling out is, hey, how about this
I
new
gotcha.
European acquisition
Okay.
on our Euros? So at the midway point, we're heading into the midway point for the Wolves. They're still a few games away, but I'll be taking a much closer look at them, having a nice analysis. I'll be plugging our friend Steve McPherson's recent work on the Wolves as well, as a side note. The logo, I can say the new logo of the winning player
Yes.
is done, to be revealed very soon. Maybe I'll even put it up today. So maybe by the time you hear this podcast, it will be up, but very soon. And then the slight redesign of the site will follow that. It shouldn't take too long. So look for that, the facelift about to be undergone at ballinyourhope.com. And other than that, just general fun and analysis of EuroLeague and European basketball action.
Are you happy with the logo?
Oh yeah, it
How it
looks
turned
perfect.
out?
It looks great. It looks great. Yeah, it's gonna be good. A lot of red. A lot of red in it. But yeah, I think people will be pleased. I think it's a nice job. It harkens back enough to the old logo, but yet is unique enough so that it represents a new wave, a new era at ballandnerf.com.
Cool. Looking forward to that. So you said today maybe one.
Yeah. I'll probably put it up next week. I was gonna wait until the whole redesign, but yeah, I think people have been waiting long enough. I think I'll just throw up the graphic today.
Should throw it up and then take it down. Just
Oh no. No,
teasing.
I think once I do put it up, that will be the page. It'll just be a massive post with the massive graphic on it.
Yeah, I'm not really working on too much. I'll be,
Recovering from your illness is what you'll
yeah,
be.
I will be in bed probably most of the time and trying to get over this thing.
But we should say that you've done a squall of good work in the past couple of days, even going into this podcast. I encourage everybody to read the bit with Mr. Palmer, Jan Palmer,
Bummer, yeah.
of the German Federation on the FIBA changes with which Bollinger was pretty obsessed. I encourage all the listeners to go to High News and check out that one for sure. So Dave, yeah, I mean you've done good work this week. Yeah, rest up for a couple
I can
of days.
rest up. Okay.
We'll give you a DNP for the next couple of days.
Yeah, the main thing story-wise that I'm working on, I'm trying to finish up my long piece on Daniel Theis. I did one for EuroCup, which was up last week, but I'm gonna do a long piece for my site, and then I'll start looking for other pieces, other youngsters in Germany, and then work on that. So, but first and foremost, make it to next week, make and get over this cold. So, thanks everybody for listening. We will talk next week, and again, hopefully, I will be feeling better. Sorry that I wasn't my usual jovial self, but that will change next week.
Go. Gotta let go. 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 Gotta let go. Go. Gotta let go. 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 Gotta let go. Go. Gotta let go. 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 Gotta let go. 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 Now, 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 what's
seems I'm in your dreams. Party machine like Charlie Sheen. We go hard, you know my team. Oh my god, we causing a scene. Live sirene, so much steam. Part of my life is too obscene. On codeine, senses are keen. Close to the edge, cause I'm extreme. Reigning supreme, you want my green. Lean on me, I'm making the cream. Ball on fools like Captain Kareem. Shoot him up, bang, put a hold to your spleen. Wet your scheme, no smoke screen. Hardly the dream that you foreseen. Just come clean, you want my stream. Party over here, just don't intervene. We'll be right back.